Welcome to Ancient Future Faith with Dr. Chris Alford, pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community in Sacramento. Just what is ancient future Christian faith? Join Chris each week as he talks with special guests about a refreshing renewal in evangelical worship and spirituality that's helping many believers get in touch with their ancient Christian heritage. Now, with another look at how the road to the evangelical future runs through the ancient past, here's Dr. Chris Alford.
Well, hi there, folks, and welcome back to another edition of Ancient Future Faith. My name is Chris Alford, and I'm the blessed guy who's the pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community. It's a Bible-believing, Jesus-loving church in Sacramento. As always, I love to send people over to our website. That's epiclesis.org, E-P-I-C-L-E-S-I-S.org. You can learn all about Epiclesis, the church, and best of all, we'd love to have you come visit us sometime on a Sunday morning. You folks know that I love to have guests on this program, and I'm so excited about having in the studio somebody who's my new friend and a marvelous person. I can't wait for you to meet Cornel Mich. Cornel, welcome and thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
We probably ought to tell people how we met. Folks who know me know that I love to collect people. Maybe you're the same way, Cornel. I don't know.
Yes.
And one of the folks in my church met Cornel when their grandkids were going to some swim classes. And when Cornel told Carl, our mutual friend, about his life and his story, I had to meet you, Cornel. I'm so glad God caused our paths to cross. Yeah?
Amen.
Cornel, tell us just a little bit about you, what you're doing right now, because then I'd really like to unpack your story. You are Romanian. You fled that country before the fall of Ceausescu.
Correct.
And I want to hear that story in a minute, but just a little bit about who you are and what makes you tick.
Thanks, Chris, for having me. Like you presented me, I'm Cornel Mich. I'm from Romania. Right now, I'm in Sacramento, a member of a Grace Romanian Baptist Church. Mm-hmm. I'm in a leading position there, preaching the gospel in our church. I'm doing Bible study and all the needs in the church for our community. We're not too big, but we're good and inflamed for Jesus.
Well, that's what matters, yes?
Yes.
How long have you been there, Cornel?
I'm in Sacramento for 33 and a half years.
Okay, so that's right. You came directly here from Romania, yes?
Correct, yeah. In 1988.
Which you historians out there will remember is a full year, I guess, right? Before the fall of the evil regime of Ceausescu, right?
Almost 2 years, actually. Oh, okay. Because I came here in March of 1988.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, let's get right to it. You've been on fire for the Lord Jesus longer than 33 years.
Absolutely.
And you were very active Christian in a place and in a time and in ways that were frankly illegal. Tell the folks about your life and what you were doing in that country, what led you to be imprisoned, and then how you got out. It's a miracle story.
I was born in a family somewhere in the north part of Romania, a Christian family, and my home was a little church. My father was leading that church. Actually, it was the first church in that part of the country. I didn't become a child of God until I was in the military, away from home. After I finished high school, I went to Bucharest to college over there for becoming an engineer. Mm-hmm. During that time, I joined a church, one of the largest churches in Bucharest, where I was involved with the youth. I was young, and somebody put an eye on me. He said, you know, you are good to distribute Bibles and Christian literature. We are receiving from overseas Bibles, and we need people which will take the risk to give these Bibles to Christians and non-Christians.
We should say, what was the risk? Why was it a risk?
Because it was illegal in the country at the time. Ceausescu was leading the regime, the communist regime at that time. Was illegal to have a Bible, actually.
Wow.
And if you had one, you hide it as much you could. There was a shortage of Bibles in that time. Mm. But brothers and sisters from Germany and other countries, they sent us through. They know how they got in the country. But we got it. And we had from a center location, we had to distribute through the whole country. Mm. We took them in luggages, among other clothes and other things. And we travel by train, by bus, with a bicycle, or some of us which had cars, we traveled with cars.
Yeah. Was it scary? I mean, was it frightening to do this?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very scary. Because if they caught you, they'll get you to the judge and they'll give you prison time or they'll send you to a labor camp.
Yeah. Well, and that's exactly what happened to you, right? Yeah. Pick up the story from there.
In 1985, in May, 5 o'clock in the morning, the apartment building where we live in Bucharest was surrounded by secret police called Securitate. Mm. Dozens and dozens of people with the guns, and they came like for a big criminal. They came to arrest me. And four people got into the apartment. I was living at the time with another family. We didn't have our own place. They just gave us a room. They had four bedrooms, and they gave us one room. Mm. And they came in with a force. They started yelling and screaming and searched the house. They found a bunch of Bibles and Christian literature. And they took me out from the house, and they arrested me and put me in a car and took me to the station on the center part of the Romania, where the main Securitate center was. My wife and my mother-in-law was there, too. She came to visit us, to visit her first grandson. Mm. And other relatives from my hometown came. They let the people in, but nobody could leave the apartment building. Oh. And they were there for the whole day. And I didn't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. Finally, they started interrogating me, what's going on, what happened. They took everything they could find in a home, except under the crib of my son, we had four or five boxes full of Bible and Christian literature. I'm just going to mention that. My son was the youngest smuggler of Bibles because he was only 12 days old. And they never took anything which was under that crib.
Oh, wow.
So they keep me for 3 days to their Securitate on the sixth floor, and no water, no food, no nothing for
3 days.
3 days. Interrogation. Oh. And we were a group of four of us. All four of us were caught at the time because it was a link which was weak from us. And the night before, we gave Bibles, four big luggages, to a friend of ours, which lives about 50 kilometers west from Bucharest. Mm-hmm. We load him in a car with all these goodies. And when he got out from the Bucharest, there were places where the police will search the cars. Mm-hmm. He was stopped and searched and find everything. Mm. He had nine children. Four of them were with him on top of the luggages on the back seat, but still the police stopped them and find all of this. Wow. And he was weak. He told where he got those Bibles from. I was the first one in line, then two more brothers. So they caught all four of us. They took it over there, but they kept in the separate cells, every one of us. And after 3 days in interrogation and all that, we had to write and sign everything, what we did, where you got that from. They couldn't find much from us because three of us were very strong. They never find out how the Bible got in. They never found anything.
I have to ask, Cornell, and if you prefer not to answer or if it's too difficult, please just we'll move on. But were you physically mistreated during this time?
Only when they got inside of the house, I asked them what you guys are doing here. And one of these officers, he was a major, he hit me behind my neck. Mm. That was the only thing I got. The other three, they get beaten. I was polite with them because as the Bible teaches us to be polite. I was not offensive. I didn't, because I couldn't fight with those people which arrest me.
Right.
We're fighting with the system.
Right.
So when you fight with the system, you don't fight with the person in front of you.
Hmm.
And that way, God protecting me. That's the only thing I got.
Yeah. We pick up the story in a courtroom in just a minute. But first, let me remind folks that they're listening to a program called Ancient Future Faith. I'm Chris Alford, the host of the program and the pastor of Epiclesis, an evangelical church in Sacramento, California. My guest today, Cornell Mich. He is a former Romanian, proud to be an American. He has an incredible story. And just before the break there, Cornell, you were talking about the interrogation. The other day, you told me this amazing story, bold story, about what you said when you finally appeared before a judge. Can you bring us up to date there?
going through the courts in Romania, it's a long process. We hire two lawyers. They just came to Christ, this family, husband and wife. They are in Texas now, good friends of mine. And they are on our side, and they didn't know what mess they are getting into.
Yeah.
Because they had to suffer a lot because of that later. But this will be another story.
Okay.
So we're in the courtroom multiple times. Ah. It's not just one time. We talk about from May until September.
Oh, wow.
We've been through court so many times, and all kind of paper, all kind of documentation, and our lawyers present our cause. And they made a decision. Finally, they gave us 1 year prison in a labor camp.
I see.
But when the judge was reading the sentence, it's not like here in America. You didn't have to stand up. When you sit down. That's how it was at the time. I don't know how it is now. But when the judge was reading the sentence, and the reason we're punished is because we distribute Bibles and Christian literature without authorization.
Right.
And at that moment, you know, something like a spring from the chair got me up, and I raised my left hand. I said, "Judge, Your Honor, can you give us that authorization so we can distribute Bibles and Christian literature freely in this country?" Yes, shut up. I'm going to put you in prison for the rest of your life.
Oh.
But his power was limited. They put us in to work for the government. And they took whatever our wages, they took 70% of our wages. They gave us 30%.
Wow.
But I'll mention that God was good with us. They put me to work in a factory.
Yeah.
You know, I was an engineer. They put me just to work to do manual labor.
Right.
And my supervisor, he knew me. He knew my history. He knew what my situation is.
Mm-hmm.
And every day, we had a payday on the 1st and the 15th of the month. I was paid 30%. And he will call me in his office, and he will give me the other 70%. Nobody knew it.
Oh.
This happened for 6 months. Because after 6 months, Ceausescu gave a decree to get us free. So we got 1 year, but half of the, we did only half, 6 months, and we're free from that situation.
I have to pick your brains about Ceausescu just for a moment, because my impression of him sitting on this side of the ocean in this place in history was that he was an absolutely and completely and totally evil and brutal dictator. Is that so? Or were there times where he led in a way that was fair and right? I mean, perhaps it's a dumb question, but I just am ignorant on the subject.
First time, like any evil, is not showing his the true colors from the beginning.
Right, right.
At the beginning, the country was doing pretty good, actually.
Mm.
He was for the country. He was for the creating jobs, and everybody had jobs. Not good paid, but everybody had a place to live. But then his ego got up and up, and he wants to build things, big things.
Right.
Big factories, big buildings, and that way got the country in debt. And because the country was in a big debt, the population had to suffer.
Yeah, that's one of the things I remember about him, is creating these huge buildings in this brutalist sort of Nazi-looking architectural style, and just the opulence with which he and his wife lived their lives. And we saw that at the end after they were executed, just absolutely made a huge impression on me.
Like I said at the beginning, things were kind of okay, but later on, because of the death, because his ego to build all these big things, which are not good for the people.
Right.
Or just to build up who he is, to leave something behind him.
So I can imagine that all of these little changes where people are being squeezed and or made to behave in a particular way or given speech codes or things that are forbidden happen slowly and incrementally over time, yes?
Exactly. Yeah. First of all, they took the land from the population. So nobody could have just a little bit of land behind the house or something. Everything was the collectivization at that time.
Right.
In 1962, they got all the land, so they built these big agriculture farms to work with tractors and all of that. And people are, especially from the countryside, they suffered a lot, losing their land, losing their ability of living. Then he started moving population from villages to large cities, in order to feed those big factories.
Yes.
People don't like to be moved by force.
No.
On top of all of this, you could not go to a church the way you wanted. There are limits, you know, how you can worship, you know, where you can worship.
Hmm.
And on top of all of this, they all have spies and who is coming to preach into a church.
And what they're saying.
What they're saying, especially right. when we have in large cities in Bucharest and other large cities in the country, we had visitors from out of the country. And they'll let them come, especially from America, they'll let them come because they profit from that.
Right.
But they want to make sure they control what they are saying, how they influence the people.
Cornell, sometimes you hear about people escaping from behind the Iron Curtain, and they are dramatic tales of, say, digging tunnels or hang gliding over the Berlin Wall and that kind of thing. But you didn't have to escape, did you? You have a very fascinating and scary, at least to me, bold story about how you got out of the country. Would you share that with folks?
I like to mention from Romania, people are fleeing, swimming the Danube River.
Right.
Or through Hungary or to other places, but it was a very big risk. You know, people could be shot, and many are, or the ones that are caught, they put in prison. My story is different because when we were caught with the transport of Bibles and Christian literature, 2 weeks later, we got a letter from the United States Embassy saying, if you want to go in America, you already have the visa.
Wow.
Which, that was a big blessing. You know,
what a miracle.
People in Romania, many people, many Christians, they want to live in a free country where they can express their faith, which was limited in Romania. You could go to church, but there are limitations. You know, you cannot have baptism. You cannot have that. You cannot have that. And not only that, in school, the kids are taught there is no God.
You're right.
And the Communist Party was very strong at that time. And when Ceausescu, when he built all of these big things, he had to remove some of the building. Many churches and other historical building there, they removed in order to build his big building. But my story to how I got out of the country, you know, I got a visa, but I applied for a passport, and the passport services didn't give me the passport. I waited for a year and a half.
Wow.
In the meantime, I was moved from Bucharest. The judge decided that I cannot live in Bucharest anymore, so he decided that I have to move out, and they moved me to Sibiu, which is in the center part of Romania, a nice, beautiful part of the country. Mm-hmm. That's actually where my wife was born. It just happened in that county, the chief of that region was the youngest son of Ceausescu. His name is Nicu. Just a few years old.
So just to make sure everybody understands, the governor of that region is the son of the national dictator, Ceausescu.
Okay. Exactly. The reason he was there, his father was trying him to see how he can get up in the ladder. Hopefully he's going to follow his footsteps. Hopefully he's going to leave the country to him. That was the goal. Mm. You know, first giving him this big county. I find out how he comes to work in the morning, which way he comes with a car, and you know, has a driver and all that. The car was named Dacia 2000. I remember the nice black cars. And a morning, I waited when he came to work, and when the car turned right, I couldn't stay on the same side of the road where the building is, where he gets into the county seat building. I had to be across the street because the police won't let you stay there. So when I saw the car coming, I crossed the street in front of the cars and everything. I was there when he got out from the car. And I walked towards him, and the cops got me.
Yeah.
And they wanted to put the cuffs on me.
Oh.
And he said, let him come. Let's see what he wants. Wow. That's what Nicu said. I never knew him. He was not my friend.
No.
And I walked towards him. He said, what do you want? I said, I want to leave the country. Where do you want to go? In America. And I had a piece of paper where I wrote all my situation.
Mm-hmm.
He said, what do you have there? I said, I describe everything which I have here. So he said, give it to me. So I gave it to him. He said, no problem, you will go. And he walked inside of the building, the big building inside. I never been in that building. You couldn't go there in that building,
right.
Just them.
Yes.
A big inside staircase. And from the top of the stairs, he turned back to the cops and he said, let him go.
Wow.
And they let me go. 2 weeks later, I got a phone call from the passport services that said, come and pick up your passports and
2 weeks.
Leave the country.
Oh, Cornell, there isn't a moment in your life that God's hand wasn't in. Oh, my goodness. I bet you have a million other stories, too. But time after time, God has protected and blessed and put the pieces together and made the connections. It's remarkable.
Absolutely. Our God is great God.
Oh. Folks, you're listening to an interview with my new friend, Cornel Mich, and he is from Romania formerly, and now he is a local pastor here in Sacramento. We're talking about his amazing life and then his leaving the country. In our remaining moments, Cornel, and by the way, we're not going to have enough time to get through all of this, so will you agree even now to come back and do this again?
Absolutely.
Oh, I just would love to have you. I think I mentioned to you the other day that Epiclesis, my church, is sponsoring a retreat this fall. It's the final weekend of October, and best-selling author Rod Dreher is going to be our guest. Among other things, Rod has done a whole lot of research by going to visit former Christian dissidents in former Soviet bloc countries, and he has written a marvelous book called Live Not by Lies, a manual for Christian dissidents. That title, Live Not by Lies, comes from Solzhenitsyn. Among other things, Rod is saying that these former dissidents are sounding the alarm for what they see happening in this country and saying, America, don't make the mistake of thinking that the things that happen to us cannot happen to you. Is he right about that? Are those folks right in saying that?
Absolutely. Here in America and everywhere in the world where it was not communism, if they don't read the history of those countries where the communism was, the mistake you're doing is you can repeat that here.
Yeah.
The history is to learn from others. Christians here in America, watch out. The left is coming the way they are coming with some sugar pills. They are offering something, but in the end, it's very sour.
And you have seen,
I've seen these
sugar pills before.
I had those sugar pills. I thought it was going to be okay. But I saw in my first 30 years of life, I had a taste of that bad taste of how the socialism and communism is for the people. Especially for us Christian, you know, put limitation. They fight with us. They don't fight with drug dealers. They don't fight with other sins which are in the world. But the communists, the socialists, and the communists, they are fighting with the Christians.
They hate Christians in particular.
And yes. They don't hate Christians as much. They hate our God. That's the problem.
Yeah,
they don't want God. They kicked God out from the schools. They kicked God out of government. They kicked God out of...
Well, even the churches.
Even put limitation to churches.
Right.
So you cannot put limitation how to worship our God. We are worshiping the Almighty God, the creator of the universe. He is the only one to decide as how to worship him. No man can do that. So anybody which impose how to worship God, watch out. Oh. Don't believe those people.
Oh, preach, brother. Well, folks, we've got to have Cornel back to talk about these things. Let's make sure that the next interview is mostly about the particular places and things that you see that feel strangely familiar. And let me remind the folks, and you too, again, about this wonderful retreat in October, last weekend of the month, featuring best-selling author Rod Dreher. And we're going to be talking about his book and his research in former Soviet bloc countries called Live Not by Lies. Thank you for taking the time for doing this. I know you're a busy guy, and I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Folks, you've been listening to an interview with Cornel Mich. He's my new friend, former Romanian local pastor, and what wisdom there is there. In the meantime, until we gather again for another edition of Ancient Future Faith, I really want you to be thinking about this. Surely the road to our Christian future does run through our Christian past. Until next time, the Lord be with you.
Thank you for joining us for another look at Ancient Future Faith. There is a refreshing wind of renewal blowing through the Evangelical Church as more and more worshipers turn for inspiration to the rich language and pattern of the ancient church, and they're rediscovering classic Christianity and learning to draw strength from a deep well of time-tested truth and tradition. Want to experience Ancient Future Faith for yourself? Join us for worship at Epiclesis in Sacramento on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. in the chapel at 4600 Winding Way. You can contact us by calling 916-572-9113 or online at epiclesis.org. That's 916-572-9113 or on the web at epiclesis.org.
Hey there, friends. This is Pastor Chris with one more important word for you before you leave. If I were capable of singing all the parts of Handel's Hallelujah Chorus, I would, because I have happy news for you. Things are opening up and we are back to in-person worship, and we are not requiring masks or social distancing. We'd love to have you join us for a Sunday morning worship service at Epiclesis. Find all the information at epiclesis.org. That's E-P-I-C-L-E-S-I-S.org. The Lord be with you, and I hope to see you this Sunday.